Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly, or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly, or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly, or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly, or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385, 618-223-8385, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club.
Our two countries agreed to continue to move this discussion forward in a human rights dialogue. I spoke to President Hu about America's bedrock beliefs that all men and women possess certain fundamental human rights.
In China, with impunity, they crush religious believers.
We don't want this to negatively impact the thousands and thousands of American Muslims who are serving honorably in the military in all services. We don't want another McCarthy-era purge of the military. I mean, come on.
We need to start speaking honestly about the nature of Islamic Jihad, its deep roots within Islamic doctrine, its deep roots in the American Muslim community. The left thinks that they can ride that tiger, and then they will be able to control them. They are very, very, very naive in that regard.
Well, I guess the big story we're going to be talking about a little bit later on Issues Etc. today is the exit of Oprah Winfrey from, at least from her daily talk show. Her spirituality fascinates many, guides many, influences many. What she reads, many read. What she believes, many believe. And she has the fans. Of course, she's going to go and form another cable network herself, and so she'll still be in the media. But we need to talk about Oprah Winfrey and her pop spirituality a little bit later here on this Friday afternoon, November the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. This is Issues Etc. First, we start with listener email on the Issues Etc. comment line. We'll pick Issues Etc. blog of the week. And after we talk about Oprah Winfrey, we'll let you pick Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E. You can Twitter us at Issues ETC, at Issues ETC. That's our Twitter address. Always email on Friday afternoons. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. When you email us, you won't always get a written response. We simply don't have the time to respond to the volume of email that we receive every day, but we try to respond to as much of the email that we get from our listeners, criticism, praise, whatever it may be, on Friday's program, first hour. What's first, Jeff? Is Jeff there?
I'm here. I wasn't ready. I was. You know, hey. You threw me off because you teased the second hour first. So I was waiting to hear the second hour lineup, and I'm sorry.
I gave the second hour lineup.
Plus, I just found my blog of the week, by the way.
Okay, well, I gave the second hour lineup.
I know. You did at the beginning. You threw me off, but you started, instead of giving the chronological order.
But did you notice, I said it's listener email, we'll pick our blog of the week, and then after we talk about Oprah Winfrey, they get to pick soundbite. That's called the lineup.
But you hooked the second hour at the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
we usually don't do that.
Well, that's true. But on Fridays, you have to have something to hook, and email is not the best hook in the world.
That's a very good point. Yeah, it's hard to come up with something new every week on email.
Believe me, I'm sitting here seconds before the broadcast trying to figure out a new way to talk about it. I figure, why? Why not talk about what we're going to talk about a little bit later? Because, I mean, there's a lot of things you can say about Oprah Winfrey, but listener email, it's better just left to speak for itself.
Did you get the Harrison pipe smoke out of your office
yet? No, that was the other thing I was going to say. I can't smell it anymore, but apparently you guys can. Of course, I have a cold, so the question of whether or not I can smell it may not be whether or not it's still in here, but does it still smell like Matt's pipe in here?
I didn't notice it today. I love the smell of pipes, so it doesn't bother me.
It didn't bother me. He is the only person we allow to smoke on premises. I don't even know if it's legal here in Illinois. It's probably illegal for us to let him smoke in here, but I mean, nobody knows we're here anyway. But no, it was aromatic. It was marvelous. It it smelled almost as good as the interview sounded.
Now you say he's the only one you would allow to smoke in there. What if we got Sarah Palin in studio? We found out she's a chronic smoker, and she asked to light one up.
I'm a gentleman. I think I'd let her do it.
What about Carrie Prejean, who stiffed us for the interview?
She didn't stiff us. She stiffed everybody.
Well, yeah.
I mean, she postponed all media appearances.
Right.
But we do have a promise from a publicist that we'll hear again. But I don't know about Carrie Prejean. She's young. I wouldn't want to encourage smoking in the young.
Folks, when it doesn't smell like pipe smoke, it smells like baby powder in the Wilkin office / on-air studio. Would you like to explain yourself?
Well, it's actually Craig's fault. I asked him to go get me some Febreze because it was starting to smell like a locker room in here. And there is kind of a locker room mentality at the LPR studios anyway. And I said, just bring me something that smells neutral. Didn't I say neutral? I said something, not something too perfumey, something that smells neutral. And he brought me back lavender, vanilla, and comfort, whatever the heck that is.
You asked for vanilla.
Did I? I thought I said something like neutral or the smell of baking cookies. Well, it smells like baby powder. But at least it takes the stench out of the room. But I haven't used it since Matt was in here. Although I must say, even if I could smell the pipe smoke, I don't think I'd mind it too much.
No, as I was walking out the door, you said, vanilla would be fine. Anything kind of vanilla or...
E? Yeah, maybe. I did say that. I didn't say lavender, vanilla, and comfort. But that's fine. I'll let Craig's taste dictate.
Maybe, because vanilla has more than one interpretation. By vanilla, you meant neutral. You know, like vanilla.
I don't remember what I meant. I just, I know what it smells like in here. The
combination. Craig's looking at me like he's never heard that interpretation of vanilla. Haven't you heard that? Like, that's so vanilla. I mean, it's just so bland. Just
bland every day. Right.
Vanilla can be very complex. That's my favorite flavor of ice cream. Everybody says, oh, vanilla, that's not very, they don't understand. Vanilla bean, French vanilla. There's so many different kinds of vanilla.
I love vanilla.
It's very complex. So. Yes. You can say that in your simple Edwardsville mind, Jeff, but most of us know that vanilla is very complex.
At least those educated by the Collinsville school system rather than the Edwardsville.
But unlike Collinsville, words can have more than one meanings.
That's true.
Hey, should we get some email?
Yeah, but I'm not the one with the stack of email sitting in front of me. Okay. I'm at your mercy in here.
Okay, this is Daniel in Lincoln, Nebraska. Great email. He said a couple of comments on your interview with Pastor Paul Spring of Lutheran Core yesterday. When asked about the issue with the authority of Scripture among the churches leaving the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, Pastor Spring didn't seem to give the question serious thought. Instead of diving into what you meant and going from there, he immediately denied there was an issue there. Thoughts occurred to me while listening to the interview regarding the relationship of this new church body with our own Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. What can we expect the nature of this relationship to be? Looking far down the road, if the direction that our synod has been holding continues, could we expect to see the LCMS and this new Lutheran church body merge while confessional churches fracture off into a new confessional church body? Thanks for listening, and thanks for the insightful email, Daniel, in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Well, I agree that, with all due respect, Pastor Spring kind of gave the party line on women's ordination. And I think he was a little, think about it. They've had women's ordination for a long time in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And so when someone raises the objection that it is not supported and, in fact, prohibited by Scripture, they tend to look at you like a cow staring at a new fence. It just seems out of the realm of possibility for them because they've lived with it for so long. That's not to excuse the unbiblical practice. And what I was suggesting was, if you guys still adhere to the ordination of women, you're still on the slippery slope toward the ordination of homosexuals. And he said, no, homosexuality is forbidden. Well, that's good. I'm glad that at least they recognize that part of Scripture. And but there still is a problem with the authority of Scripture when it comes to the ordination of women, even in this more conservative offshoot Lutheran church body that is forming here. He asks about the LCMS and whether or not, well, I'll put it this way. I think that there are some significantly placed in the leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, perhaps even its president, who really wouldn't mind being in fellowship with a church body that ordained women. I mean, they wouldn't mind it. It's not that they'd want to ordain women themselves, but, you know, if the other church body wants to, that's fine. I find it far more likely that the LCMS is going to treat this new church body like persona non grata because, for some reason, the leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is just enamored with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I mean, in spite of its complete apostasy, they're holding out hope. They're just enamored with them. And they've said all the right things about condemning the acceptance of homosexuality, but I think there's some in the leadership that really think, you know, just given enough time, we'll move close enough together where we can kind of heal this rift in spite of our differences. So I think it's far more likely that in order to remain in the good graces of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod will probably, the current leadership will probably just ignore the new Lutheran Church body. They might make some pro forma overtures toward them, but I doubt there's going to be any big move in that direction. Now, I might be wrong. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but that's my kind of off-the-cuff prediction. But back to the point of the email, I think it is true that there are those who probably wouldn't have any problem overlooking the fact that this new Lutheran church body is going to ordain women and have women in pastoral leadership positions. I don't think they'd have a problem with that in principle. They will not publicly say this. Of course, they won't publicly say it. But look, why can't we just be honest? There are pastors and there are leaders in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod who really wouldn't mind if the LCMS ordained women. Let's just be honest about it rather than playing this little kabuki dance that we do with one another where people say, well, no, I'm not in favor of the ordination of women, when in fact they really are, or they'd be willing to look the other way on it. So let's just be honest. And to do so, to be honest like that, is better than being dishonest, affirming what the Bible teaches without really believing it, don't you think? I would rather have someone who questions the authority of the Bible on things like the authority exercised by women in the church, who openly questions it, than someone who questions it privately but won't question it honestly and openly. But we'll see what happens. When we come back, more email and some comments from the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday afternoon, November the 20th. As easy as today, and it would make me happy when you've gone so far away. You sent me an email that says I love you. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Muscoda, Illinois. Redeemer Lutheran, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Grace Lutheran, Auburn, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Pleasant Plains, Illinois. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word, Rochester Hills, Michigan. Zion Lutheran, Laramie, Wyoming. Redeemer Lutheran, Seymour, Indiana. Zion Lutheran, East Moline, Illinois. And Peace Lutheran, South St. Louis County. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
No Synodocrats allowed. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Issues Etc. relies on a small group of faithful supporters called the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. These people have pledged to become monthly or annual contributors to Issues Etc., and this allows us to budget our expenses more efficiently. Now, there are four levels of giving. The Confessor, $25 monthly or an annual gift of $250. The Apologist, $50 monthly or an annual gift of $500. The Reformer, $100 monthly or an annual gift of $1,000. And the Patron, $200 monthly or an annual gift of $2,000. Each Reformation Club member receives premiums like books, transcripts, and the I Have Issues t-shirt. You can join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club by contacting Craig. His email address, craig@issuesetc.org. Or you can call 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Yay! for going through your email, and in a few minutes, we'll hear some of your comments from the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday afternoon. It's the 20th of November. Today, my daughter became a co-ed today. She's actually a college student, official. I mean, she hasn't started classes, but she's all registered. And she turned 18 just a little bit ago, week or so ago, feeling old. Feeling old, then I got a cold on top of that, and I feel like I still am wearing my baseball cap. You ever have one of those colds where you put on a baseball cap and it kind of gives you a headache, and then when you take it off, you feel like you're wearing your baseball cap the rest of the day? That's what it is. That's what's going on with me. So I'm kind of sleepy.
Speaking of children, happy birthday. Today's Jack Jeffrey Schwartz's third birthday.
No kidding. November 20th. Yeah. No kidding. Little Jack.
Yep. He was in bed last night, and he wasn't feeling good. He says, no sick of birthday. And we woke up this morning, and Emily, our oldest daughter, had 105 temperature.
If anybody wants to picture what Jack Schwartz looks like.
Mickey Mouse.
Well, Mickey Mouse, but I think even more so, but not when he was first born, he was the baby from The Incredibles. No doubt about it. Little Jack-Jack from The Incredibles. It was so, just as much as there's a little kid that lives next door to us down there in Waterloo who is the little Boy Scout from the Up movie. I mean, he is. He comes to the door, and he is that kid from the Up movie. If you saw him, you would say, there's the Up kid movie. There's the Up movie kid or whatever his name is. But Jack was Jack-Jack, no doubt about it. I mean, it's uncanny how much they looked alike and acted alike.
You know what I'd like to know? I'd like to know if any of our listeners ever watched The Mentalist. I watched The Mentalist. Usually my wife loves it because the main character is like eye candy. You know, it's almost like Brad Pitt, Adam in the Garden of Eden looking. So I watched my wife last night. Man, did anybody watch it last night? It was like a mob. Everybody was getting killed, and they go to break when somebody was just at gunpoint, kind of like Who Shot JR? Every single commercial. I was like on the edge of my seat, and I usually don't watch it. I usually fall asleep. But The Mentalist, call us or email if anybody watched The Mentalist last night. I mean, I loved the show. I mean, that was my first time watching an episode. I couldn't go to sleep.
But we know what's going to happen because – Craig, you tell him, whenever Jeff declares his undying love and affection for any television program, with the exception of 24 or The Deadliest Catch, what happens?
Anytime Jeff gives any endorsement on a show, it gets canceled. I remember that one time we were talking about, I think, Jeff's previous favorite show, The Unit. He came in 3 weeks in a row, and it was, man, did you watch it? It was so good. No, Jeff, I missed it. 3 weeks in a row, and then during that third week, about 3 days after the show, there's the article in the paper. The Unit's been canceled. So it'll happen again.
Right. He is the death blow to it. I mean, they believe me, once the Nielsen people find out Jeff's watching, it's like, all right, now we've hit the bottom of the barrel.
Well, somebody call in and save me. I just want to know if there's one person out there that watches The Mentalist, and if they watched it last night, 877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or send me an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Don't leave me hanging out there if you're a Mentalist fan.
What are some shows that we don't like? Those are the ones we need to get Jeff watching.
That's
so they'll cancel those.
That's true. Anything that says anything that has the word model in it.
Or So You Think You Can Dance or American Idol. Start watching some of those, Jeff.
Hey, Wilkins, American Idol guy.
I have to admit, I do watch American Idol when it's on. And So You Think You Can Dance.
He watches that too.
No.
Craig doesn't understand. Women control the television.
Craig is obviously unmarried. Yes, it's being watched while I'm in the room. And I do occasionally say, you'd ask a question of my wife. But most of the time, I'm on the laptop when So You Think You Can Dance. Not all the time, but most of the time, I am.
All right, here's an email from Eric in Maryland. And judging by no phone calls and no emails, I guess I'm the only Mentalist fan out there. Eric in Maryland, he says, I'm an on-demand listener and just finished listening to your segment on a Vatican conference on extraterrestrial life. While I am very happy you decided to discuss this topic, the segment left me somewhat unsatisfied. What do you think? Is there terrestrial sentinel life equal to humans out there? Does the Bible disallow that possibility? In thinking about this, I think that the Bible does not allow for the possibility, and here is my reasoning. The Bible contains the creation story, the story of the entire creation. Adam and Eve were created as part of creation. They sinned. Now all of creation bears their sin, and we all inherit their original sin. if there is sentinel life in creation, other sentinel life in creation, they are either A, without sin, B, somehow descendants of Adam and Eve, C, inheritors of some other sin, D, somehow tainted by Adam and Eve's sin. This does not seem likely given what the Bible says about God. Jesus was born from the line of Adam. He was born fully human and fully God. Jesus died to pay for our sins and restore a fallen creation. If other sentinel life exists and they are without sin, then Jesus did not need to die for them. Therefore, they could not be part of this creation. If other sentient life exists, and they are inheritors of some other sin, then why did Jesus come to earth as a human, and how did his death as fully human pay for their sins? If other life exists, thanks for using other life instead of sentient there, Eric. If other life exists, and they are somehow descendants of Adam and Eve, then God has not disclosed this in the Bible. For this to be true, some other event must have happened that took some people from Earth and deposited them elsewhere in the universe. While the Bible does not eliminate this possibility, it seems difficult to believe. It also raises other questions about how those people would come to know Jesus and his saving work for them. Please tell me how my logic is faulty here. It is something that I have struggled with. Thanks for the email, and thanks for listening, Eric in Maryland.
Okay, I think you're reasoning correctly. I think you're allowing too much, Eric. I don't even think we need to say as Christians, if such life exists. I think the Bible precludes it, not explicitly, but implicitly. That is, the Bible doesn't just focus on mankind. The Bible makes fairly clear that mankind is the pinnacle of God's creation, and that mankind dwells here on this planet. While I think the Bible would permit for there to be non-human life elsewhere in the universe, I happen to think, as a matter of opinion, and purely opinion, that probably the universe is teeming with non-human life. Man is the unique and special creation. That is the image of God that he bore in his original creation. And so I think the Bible precludes anything like human life elsewhere, not only from the perspective of the creation, but you also mentioned this as well, Eric, and you did well to do so, and that is the incarnation. The incarnation nails it because Christ came to redeem fallen mankind. So the summary of the argument, I've actually written something called Is the Belief in Extraterrestrial Races Compatible with Christianity? I could send it to anybody who'd like to copy. It's a one-page thing, very simple argument. And if you email me, todd@issuesetc.org, I'd be happy to send you a copy of it. But my argument is this. There's a single origin of man. The universal fall into sin, that is, the fall into sin affected everything and all life in the universe. God's desire to save all sinners through Jesus and the single incarnation of Jesus in human flesh, these clear biblical teachings logically preclude the existence of extraterrestrial races. You want to read more? Email me, todd@issuesetc.org. I'd be happy to send that one-page thing I wrote back in 2003, and you can read it for yourself. So are there aliens? No, we don't have to worry about it because of the unique creation of man and the incarnation of Christ. They preclude these other races. Next, here's a comment about our series with Pastor Will Whedon on the Nicene Creed.
Hi, I'm Teresa Gaffer from Maple Grove, Minnesota. And I really enjoyed this series on the Nicene Creed. And I'd like to follow up with a question regarding that topic. I've heard many people and organizations, of course, for example, the Jehovah Witnesses, who attack the Council of Nicaea and the Nicene Creed, saying that the Emperor Constantine played an overactive role in guiding the theological outcome. They say that he strong-armed the Council to its decision, not because it was correct doctrine, but because he didn't want the religious division to be a threat to his empire, and that the participants had to walk down hallways lined with his armed soldiers, and they tried to intimidate them, and the bishops were basically coerced into their decision against their better judgment. I've heard people talk about it in almost the same tones like they would a big conspiracy theory. So I was wondering, how do we respond to that kind of historical description of the council proceedings? And how do we defend the accord that was reached that Jesus is of one substance with the Father? So I'd appreciate any information you could pass on regarding that. I was just kind of wondering. Thanks. Bye-bye.
It is a very good question. You're right. Jehovah's Witnesses and others will call into question the conclusions and the means by which the Nicene Council and the other councils that kind of went in the same direction, the conclusions that they reached. First of all, we can respond historically. Had Constantine simply wanted peace, and believe it, he did want peace in his empire. All right, he may have had a purely political motive, but that does not mean that he coerced the bishops, and it doesn't mean that he forced them into conclusion that he wanted. In fact, I would argue if he was acting purely from political motives, he would have coerced the bishops into the Arian position because it was far more popular in certain parts of the empire than was the Orthodox position. And he could have gotten far more popular support for the Arian position. But in fact, the Nicene Council and other councils rejected Arianism and Arius and the notion that Jesus was of a similar substance to the Father. And they asserted over against popular opinion that he is of the same substance with the Father. So the argument really doesn't hold water. If he really wanted peace, he would have forced them into the Arian position, but he didn't. I think the best accounts of the Nicene Council and the other councils is that the emperors, while they convene them, they're also the logical people to convene these things. There was no pope in those days. Didn't have a very heavy hand in the conclusions. They left the theology to the theologians. When we come back, more email, more comment line. It's Friday afternoon, November the 20th. We know that many congregations are putting together their budgets for next year. Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget for 2010. Simply go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and find out more about the Issues Etc. 300. You'll even find a one-page flyer that you can hand out. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc. The Issues Etc. 300.
So what's the fad du jour at your church? Beth Moore, Rick Warren, post-emergent, pre-emergent, or some other move of the spirit that hasn't quite hit you yet? At the Brothers of John the Steadfast, we're kicking it old school. And by old school, I mean the 1580 Book of Concord. Check out our website for a list of confessional study groups, or if you have one at your congregation, you can let us know. www.steadfastlutherans.com.
Old theology, new technology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It's said prison inmates have their own system of justice. It's common knowledge child molesters don't have an easy time of it when they're behind bars. So it shouldn't surprise you, Edward Urin, an abortionist, is experiencing some of the same while incarcerated. The abortionist was convicted of twice trying to poison his girlfriend's drink to cause her to have an abortion. His efforts failed, but now he's in jail and unable to kill his own baby or others. And he's whining about being called a baby killer and getting harassment from fellow inmates. Even convicted criminals understand abortion kills babies. Why can't Mr. Urin get a grip on this reality? Hopefully, the time spent in prison will help this abortionist realize killing innocent unborn babies isn't the answer to a problem.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Wait! Oh, yes! Wait a minute, Mr. Postman! Wait! Wait! Hey, 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 Mr. Postman! Mr. Postman!
Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going through listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line. Our call-in number on this Friday afternoon, 1-877-623-MY-IE. 877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. Twitter us at issuesetc.
I was just looking at some statistics from listening in the past week. Monday's interview with Larry Rast on the review of Joel Osteen's book, It's Your Time, 6,628 downloads already.
Oh, that's good so far.
Yeah.
But our top one, what is our top one?
It's somewhere like 9,000, and I don't remember what it is.
You know, we've discovered that a lot of that depends on who links to this stuff. And we've got certain bloggers out there, certain websites out there, and when they link to these interviews, it drives the numbers up really well, too. which reminds me, we've got that share feature at our website, issuesetc.org. Each segment of audio you find there on the on-demand page also has a little tiny button underneath it called Share This. If you click on there, you find, I think, over 40 ways, including email and the old-fashioned ways, to share the audio that you find there at our Issues Etc. on-demand page. Just click on it, and you can. It just gives you a very simple way to email it to your friends, put it on Facebook, MySpace, whatever it is you're using to network socially.
Pamela in Valencia, California writes, I heard you read some email criticism of Pastor Wilkins' sarcasm, and I beg to differ. I abhor sarcasm. I adore sarcasm, dry wit, and satire, and I have a sneaking suspicion the criticism of these more manly forms of humor is part of the chickification of our culture. I like that, chickification. I like that. I'm going to have to use that. A sin? Bah. Jim needs to get a thicker skin and find a sense of humor. Please. I'm begging. Else Issues Etc. without a little dry humor will be just dry. I will give Jim the point that too much sarcasm would make our dear sweet Pastor Wilkin the heir of a crabby old man. Wouldn't want that either, I suppose. But we're nowhere near having that problem. I'm headed over to the donate page right now, hoping to bribe Pastor Wilkin into one little gem of a sarcastic barb, writes Pamela in Valencia, California.
Well, Pamela, thank you very much, and thank you for your support as well. I have learned the lesson the hard way, and to restrain my sarcasm, my sardonic humor on the air. And Pamela is certainly must be a very rare female listener indeed, because I think female listeners tend to be turned off by male sarcasm. In fact, I'm pretty sure of it. If the one I live with at home is any indication, they don't really care for the sarcasm at all. So I'm going to continue to restrain myself. And not pretend to be something that I'm not, but I'll restrain myself in that respect. With all due respect to Pamela.
Bob in Florida reminds us that as of the one-year anniversary event, and Bob from Florida came all the way to attend our anniversary open house, that at that time the most downloaded show was the Apostles' Creed with Pastor Eric Rotman, but I do think that has been surpassed. I'm not sure.
It's probably, did you say it was a Mike Horton audio?
Horton's the last Mike Horton one, The Gospel Driven Life, is up there in the top five. I'm not sure where it's at, but it might have surpassed it. I'm not sure. I have to check that out.
People often ask about we are not experts in the internet. We just do what people teach us how to do. But people often ask about the online listening, the on-demand listening, the live listening, all those kinds of things. Some of that information we have, some of that information we don't have, and about half of it we don't know how to make sense of it. And when we ask people who should know, we get various answers. We do have some raw data, like in the last 7 days, about 71,000 individual MP3s downloaded from the issuesetc.org site, which is, it's growing every month, but that's pretty typical, about 10,000 a day. But remember, there's a lot of audio on that website now, even though we haven't been back yet 2 years, there's a lot of audio there. And when you get one, like the Larry Rasta interview, pulling down about 6,000 or more, you see how those numbers can be pretty strong. And it's why we continue to say over and over again, we love our on-demand listeners. I had someone email me today and ask, or message me today and ask me if that 71,000 figure for the last 7 days of individual audio segments downloaded included iTunes. And my answer is, I don't know. If it does include iTunes, then the number is going to be bigger. But if it doesn't, and I tend to underestimate and say it probably does include iTunes, then the number stays just the same.
There's an email from John in Norton, Ohio. He said, thanks for the talking about the Confessional Lutheran for Christ Commission program. I went to their website, and the one article by Carrie Anderson entitled We Are Different, which lists the main doctrines, was really great. I made copies of it and gave it out yesterday with the Sunday Bulletin. And he said, really enjoyed that program on equipping the priest or the importance of an educated laity. And thanks for the feedback, John in Norton, Ohio.
Oh, I was just reading Matt Harrison's book. This morning, I was going through it, and I was reading In the House of My Fathers, or At Home in the House of My Fathers. And it's amazing. It's amazing. These theologians from the first days of confessional Lutheranism in the United States. Lutherans had been there for a long time, but genuinely confessional Lutheranism about 150 years ago. Their deep and abiding concern for the laity, knowing the confessions. These were men who were experts in the Lutheran confessions, and they actually believed that the laity could be as acquainted with the Lutheran confessions as the pastors should be. They actually believed that. And you read this stuff and you think to yourself, there are actually Lutherans attending LCMS congregations who wouldn't know the Book of Concord from the phone book. They don't know, and their pastors never introduced them to it. And in some cases, never even introduced them to the small catechism. And then you read these theologians of the past saying that the lay people ought to treasure this as much as the pastors do, and you realize we have we've fallen a long, long ways.
How about sentient? Does that fit there? No? Okay.
No, not at all. What's next?
Oh. Wait, hey, well, Paul from Milwaukee, he emails and says, the term chickification is used a lot by Rush Limbaugh, which shows I don't listen enough to the El Rushbo. I'm too busy watching MSNBC and getting heat from Craig, who thinks I'm a liberal because I like to watch MSNBC and listen to NPR.
You know what it is? This is what it is. It's just an age difference. That's all it is. The older I get, I tend to become much more lax on the things that just don't matter in the long run. And I tend to become all the more confirmed in the things that really, really do matter. So my theology matters. When I was a young pastor, you could have, in an honest moment, put my theology and my politics on a scale, and they would have balanced out. That's how concerned I was about both. But my concern about politics has just paled in comparison to my growing concern about theology and the church. And I think the older you get, the more the things that really matter to you, and the younger you are, the more things like politics and all that nonsense makes a difference. It's a general observation from my own life. So that probably explains why Craig has such a hard time with you watching MSNBC.
Here's an email titled Friendly Critique. I really like the interview with Reverend Harrison on American Lutheranism. One critique, please see if there's a way to eliminate the soft spots of Matt's comments. I have a hard time hearing it while driving. Jeff, you may have to mic him up in some manner that all of his comments are able to be heard.
Well, you've actually raised I noticed this because I was editing some of Matt's audio earlier this week, and I noticed that he has a tendency to fall off
understatement.
At the end of words. And yes, you guys actually watch the levels, and you can see that he will just completely peg out, and then he'll just be this tiny little crawl on the WAV file. Well, there's not a lot we can do to fix that. And we know that it is annoying when you're listening in your car, you got ambient noise around you. There's not a lot we can do to fix that. Anything that we could do to fix it would diminish the quality of the audio or make his loud spots so loud. And believe me, there's no way to mic someone. Who are the greatest offenders? Some of our best guests. Will Wheaton.
I think it's people that are animated because our microphones here, we don't have a professional – we have carpet on the walls, okay?
Yeah.
So we've got microphones that you've got to stay right tight in that pattern.
Right, we keep them compressed.
Exactly. But it's not just the compression on it. It's the mic, the kind of mics that we purchased. And so if you've got animated guys like Harrison and Whedon, you know, flapping their hands and then they're looking every way, talking like this and talking like that, you know, that's part of the problem.
Yeah, and right. But what we're trying to do is bring you the very best guests, and sometimes those best guests are just a nightmare to deal with in terms of audio. No offense to them. The content is great, but it tends to be a nightmare to deal with them in audio. And we try and fix it the best we can. And believe me, if you've ever watched anybody in studio here, you will see either Jeff or Craig walk in here at every break and tell the guests in studio, stay in front of your mic, quit breathing into your mic. Lower your volume, pick up your volume,
Keep your nose in the center of the mic.
They're telling me constantly to do it. I've been doing this for 10 years, and they're constantly telling me that I'm off mic. I don't think I am, but they're telling me I'm off mic, telling me to get back on mic. So the concern about the quality of the audio is a daily, moment-by-moment concern here, because we know that's the only way you access us, through your ears. And we want you to be able to hear every last syllable, especially when we got guests like Pastor Matt Harrison.
You know what's frustrating as a producer is when I tell them your name It's like, okay, Todd will be with you in 2 minutes. Just call him Todd.
His name is Todd.
Stay on hold. Todd will be with you. So three times I tell him that. And then who was it? Somebody this week said Jeff.
But the worst, Sherwin.
The worst was on the Sunday Night National Show, Matt's hosting, and we had Cal Thomas on. He'd been on the show several times before. And he gives a bio. Cal, great, you know, great to have you back on the show again. He says, Jeff, I always love being on your show. So much he loved being on the show, he didn't even remember the host's name. Cal Thomas on the nationally syndicated edition of Issues, etc.
That's an awkward moment. But, you know, that's the way it should be. The host should kind of recede into the background so that the guest can shine. And if you forget the guy's name, it's understandable. We'll be right back. 10 more minutes in this hour.
Operator, could you help me, please? I attended Sunday services in a beautiful Singapore Lutheran congregation. One local man approached me and asked with a pronounced Southeast Asian accent, "You live in St. Louis? You know Todd Wilkin?"
Pastor Matt Harrison reading from his new audiobook, Christ Have Mercy, How to Put Your Faith in Action.
Who? You mean Todd Wilkin? It turned out this man, half a world away, was a regular listener via the internet, and he's hardly alone. It really is a whole new day. We are witnessing the greatest free flow of faithfully Lutheran information in the history of the Lutheran Church. It is the worldwide moment for confessional Lutheranism. It is Missouri's moment.
You can download Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison at cph.org. It costs only $10.99 to download. This new audiobook is a must-listen for Issues Etc. fans. Christ Have Mercy by Pastor Matt Harrison, cph.org.
Now, only our listeners can cancel us. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you the new Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, 1600 Gulfview Drive, Suite 230, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the new Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? Well, we've made it easy for you. Just go to the on-demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old theology, new technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the on-demand page and click Share This.
We're hearing from our listeners via email and the Issues Etc. comment line on this Friday afternoon, as usual, 1-877-623-6943 or talkback at issuesetc.org. In just a few minutes, we'll pick Issues Etc. blog of the week. By the way, our comment line, open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for you to leave comments, questions, criticisms, whatever it may be, 618-223-8384, 618-223-8384. It's all for you. What's the time limit on the comment line? Some of our commenters actually really grossly violate the time limit. 3-minute time limit, then it cuts you off and you have to leave another message. And you should be able to say what you have to say in 3 minutes. 618-223-8384. Next, a show suggestion from the comment line.
Yes, this is Pastor Eric Turnander at Peace Lutheran Church in Jefferson City, Missouri. I was calling to suggest a possible topic for Pastor Wilkin to interview someone on, and that would be the Lutheran doctrine of the three estates. You guys have done a lot of good interviews where, for instance, Gene Beath or others discussed vocation as Luther and other Christians have taught it. But I don't believe I've heard an episode or show on the three estates. So that's a suggestion. And thank you so much for your programming that you do. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for your comments. Suggestion duly noted. Somebody like Dr. Stephen Hine would be good on that particular thing. And we'll do our best. We'll do our very best. You're right. I don't think we've ever done something on the three estates. We've done stuff on vocation. The three estates have been mentioned numerous times, but we've never done an entire show. This is great. When listeners find something, they say, you know, I've never heard you do a show on this. But sometimes we have. It's just we've done so many shows, we have to point them back to the show we have done. That doesn't mean we don't revisit subjects. In fact, we do it all the time. But when listeners say, I've never heard you do a show on that, believe me, we want to hear those suggestions because we have as many blind spots and as many ruts worn in our way of thinking as anybody else. And when you think of something like that, we want to hear from you. Thank you for the suggestion.
Most amount of email this week was the program Audio Open Lines, Muslims in the Military. I'll just read two of them quickly since we only have time for two. This is from Eric in Maryland. I'm going to side with those who do not believe that followers of Islam should be allowed to serve in the U.S. military. This issue is entirely different from what occurred during World War II with the Japanese and German Americans. Unlike those who are Islamists, there is nothing inherent about being Japanese or German which would require you to convert, murder, or overthrow those who do not agree with you. Furthermore, Islamists are allowed to deceive and lie to achieve their ends, so how can they be trusted with the security of our nation? As for Christians in the military, again, it is an entirely different situation because Christians understand that their victory is not found on earth in Scripture, and Scripture clearly commands Christians to submit to authority, except in those cases where the authority would command the Christian to sin. But even in those cases, the Christian is not called to murder or overthrow, but to simply refuse and accept the consequences. And here's Barbara from Pennsylvania on the same subject. Should Muslims serve in the military, Barbara writes? It's not a difficult decision to make. The analogy to Germany doesn't apply, nor does any other analogy. The Islamic faith teaches to kill the infidels, all non-Muslims. Those that follow this religion kill. Apart from being against Christianity, is thoroughly against the Constitution. Your religious rights stop at the border of my right to live. Unless Muslims renounce their religion completely, they should not be allowed to serve in the military or any other branch of law enforcement. Their religion is simply unconstitutional. The PC that our government officials are taking part in is criminal. There should be charges against them, too. And if this includes our president, so be it. He didn't have a problem attacking a white cop before he had any facts, and now we have many facts of a religion of death, and we are playing let's pretend. Short of the gospel giving them faith in the living one, there may not be a solution to Islam. They will continue to do the work of the enemy of Christ who only wants to kill. They have been committing murder since Muhammad. We should pray for them, but civilly, we are to protect the citizens, not the murderers, writes Barbara in Pennsylvania.
Well, briefly, before we get to issues, etc., blog of the week, I think the best solution here is to simply make a careful inquiry with everyone who wants to join the military, everybody who serves there. And since it is a teaching of the Quran that it is a sin for a Muslim to kill a fellow Muslim, not that they really observe that too much, but since it is taught to be a sin and that they should not do it, they need to be asked whether or not they uphold that teaching, whether they'd be willing to violate, at least in writing, that teaching of the Quran in order to do their duty as soldiers or other servicemen in the U.S. military. It's nothing more than we would ask of anyone else. And if they need to remain pacifist with regard to their fellow Muslims, then we would ask them to be pacifist entirely. They could still serve in the military in a passive form, but as long as they're willing to uphold the Constitution, defend the United States. We just need to be honest and admit that the Muslim religion presents problems, especially nowadays, presents problems for the military, unlike other religions or even political systems. It certainly presents a whole set of unique problems that need to be dealt with. You're right, the consequences can be deadly.